Right, this is going to be another episode of the Best Damn League Show, period. Obviously, this is a non-Dom episode, but if I had to pick someone to replace Dom for an episode, I would say Peter Dunn, coach of Heretics, is quite a popular guest. People enjoy you on these shows now, Peter. It's funny how these things work, because you know one thing that actually I will toot my own horn about in esports is people may not like my style, or they might think like, why does he talk so much all this shit? Because they don't understand basically how hosting works and what you do to prompt other people. But one thing I will take a lot of credit for in esports is because I try to be over the top and be like entertaining, or at least like keep people engaged, I actually think one thing my content's been pretty good for is I've been able to bring people to the four who are really interesting people. I already know that. I've seen them in interviews. I've talked to them myself on other shows. But the thing is, it takes people a while, despite what they say in league, to warm up to people just doing analysis. Like, I think people have to be made a little bit palatable. It's why actually sometimes when you have like little barbs with them, or you find the right angle to sort of make them seem biased, it can be fun in that sense. So I've noticed actually, I feel like as the years go on, you've gotten more and more and more and more popular. Like, everyone loves you now. Everyone wants to hear you. Just give them 15 minutes a little quick. If anyone saw that reflections we did, like, the answers are about 20 minutes long. Like, pretty good, mate.
I mean, I don't know if being on Heretics has improved the popularity, okay. But definitely, you know, in 2018, you know, I didn't do shows at all before 2020. Yeah, when I came from Brazil to Europe, I think you were the first person that invited me on a show, and you know, I saw it on my YouTube mentions the other day, and I watched it, and you know, it's definitely a very different person.
Have you come a long way?
Yeah. For sure. But yeah, it's always a lot of fun. I love being on this show. So yeah.
Right, here's my question though. How do you manage? Because one thing people have always found quite clever about the way you do your Twitter is, because you're quite a polite person, it seems like you're really good at like soft flaming things in the scene. But because you're an active coach, it's hard to just reach straight up be like, this person's bad. Away. You seem to have sort of mastered how to sort of like give the same take without it being too spicy. Or am I wrong? Does everyone on Twitter go mental anyway? What's it like?
I mean, they go mental anyway. Right, but okay. But obviously you can't say, if you're a coach, you can't say somebody's dog shit, right? Like, you have to say, you know, they have a great personality or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, if people don't know, that's another reason, low-key, I'll just tell people a little bit of inside baseball. Another reason why some players and actually coaches like doing my shows is because the idea is they do say that. And then I am like, yeah, they are dog shit. Like, but they can't say that. Like, every now and then, guys, I just get to be the voice, not of the people, but of the actual industry in that regard. I'll tell you what, some pros actually low-key love that because they want to flame hard like that, but they also don't want their Twitter following to turn on them. So basically, there are many factors as to why you might enjoy watching this show. Speaking of which, totally, you know, reasonable segue there. Wasn't at all forced. You might have seen Romain from G2 sharing scrim results, including how many teams cancelled on them. Perhaps you saw Zef, you probably didn't, he's a nobody, the positional coach for Mad Lions, Koi, posting a ranking of how late teams were to scrim. Conveniently, his team's never late. The point is, even your favourite pros struggle to manage their time well and get everything done in a busy day. As a busy gamer yourself, with lots going on in your life, yeah, right, let Factor take care of your food and nutrition with their delicious, never-frozen meals, much like Lane's, much to LS's chagrin, delivered to your door and requiring a mere 2 minutes to heat up. That's enough time to get a tasty meal and ready between games, which would apparently be handy for some LEC pros, and means you could be good to go by the time the draft lobby has finished. When I'm watching LEC, I often think, I want something more gourmet than this. And just like the LCK and LPL fill that niche for me in esports, Factor has you covered outside of the game with their premium ingredients like truffle butter, filet mignon, shrimp, and asparagus. Speaking of scheduling, did you know you can pause or reschedule your deliveries? Get as few or as many as you want in a specific week to suit your busy lifestyle or those around you. Head to factormeals.com/leagueshow50 and use the code leagueshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. Now, as G2 knows, history does not repeat itself, but rather rhyme. So allow me to again state that's leagueshow50 at factormeals.com/leagueshow50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. It's easier than Roblox. That technically rhymed. Think about it. Right, that's the end of the ad. We're back into the show now. Seamlessly done. Easy. Right, Peter, obviously, this is the episode where we know who wins the split and we know the results. So I actually think this is the best one to analyse and go deep on, because we don't have to worry so much about like saying something mega and then on the weekend the teams all just wrecking us and doing all the opposite. So I actually don't want to start with G2. We'll save that. That'll be the dessert, ooh, right? Because obviously we can tease that into MSI. I actually want to start with, believe it or not, your old mate, Mac, in Vitality. Because I've got to say, mate, when I look at these playoffs, right, maybe we'll talk about your team in a minute, but when I look at your team, like, your team absolutely could have won that series against Fnatic, but you also could have lost to SK. So, you know, there's the give and take on that one, both sides of the ledger. Vitality, though, is actually one of the teams that underwhelmed me in this playoffs, though, mate. I actually really thought when I was watching them get wins and I saw them going against Fnatic, I was like, mate, with how much Fnatic can make mistakes sometimes, this might be doable. Like, that's a world maybe they can even, like, get something in the draft here. And I was kind of underwhelmed by that series, mate. I was kind of, look, Fnatic, we all know the like punching power is up there. It's actually why people hope they'd be able to win games against G2. But what do you think of Vitality? I mean, it's a team that clearly has, I mean, here's the thing, I'll tell someone, when I recently did a show that's forthcoming and we had to do our all pro list, I can tell you straight up, Peter, it might shock you, but I had two Vitality players on there. I had Photon, really? Top and I had Kazi and ADC. Like, I actually think these guys are beasts, mate. I actually think in different ways they're not always able to carry the games like I think they would. So what are your thoughts on Vitality? Where are you at on this squad?
I mean, I'm going to say that, like, the weakness of Vitality is really, really clear, right? Like, if you look at the win rates for their jungle champions, they have positive win rate on two jungle champions. And those champions are Rell and Maokai, I believe. Let me just quickly just double check to
make
sure.
That makes sense. Definitely Rell. Definitely
Rell. Yeah, definitely Rell and Maokai, right? And maybe when we talk about Mad Lions, you know, giving them Rell two games in a row. Yeah, it's Rell, Maokai, and Bran, but, you know, Bran's not in the meta anymore, right? So they have positive win rates on three champions, right? And it's very clear why this is. And, you know, Douglas is somebody who has a lot of talent, right? And, you know, he's come up through the Vitality system, but clearly within this team, he's struggled a lot in this team, right? And, you know, what I'm going to say about Vitality is Vitality have made this roster change. You know, it's the entire narrative about bringing Linkers in. You know, it's all about K-Corp. Not the whole narrative about has just become around K-Corp.
Yes.
But actually, what they've done is they've somehow managed to bring in like one of the best jungle talents like of recent years, and nobody seems to think about what were Vitality's biggest vulnerabilities.
Oh, so people are missing, essentially, that this isn't just like, here's Linkas over Douglas. It's like, actually, this could be the missing piece that makes it the team I'm hoping for. I was hoping it could be a contender, mate. I thought if they get things together, they could be in the final against G2.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary for us. You know, we have to come top four, you know,
sure.
And there's G2, there's Fnatic. If Vitality are fixing some of their things, right, you know, there's something we're going to have to work out. But let me put it this way. How can I put this in a simple way? If Jankos decided he wanted to, he doesn't want to retire, right? But if, you know, let's say he decided to retire, Linkers is the jungler who I would have loved to have on my team. And like, this guy is, he's incredibly talented. His level of potential, I would say, is higher than Eluya's was coming into the league, right? So obviously Eluya in 2021 grew into his role, and then obviously he's like the superstar jungle later. But I would say Linkas in 2024 is at a higher level than Eluya was in 2020. And obviously this is a player Mac has known for a very, very long time. He worked with Duke, obviously. Mac and Duke talk a lot with... and before he was working with Zen, I can't remember his team, but I remember Zen was his coach. And, you know, those are two coaches Mac has known incredibly well within the scene for years. You know, these coaches have worked with him for combined maybe 8 years or something, right? In assistant coaching role and various roles. So he's been, obviously this is a guy he's been tracking. It's the guy that he's wanted for a long time. He's made no secret about how highly he values this guy. And now they've managed to land him. I was surprised that they didn't bring him in at the start of the year, but you know, things worked out, and I mean, we'll see how he fits in. This guy has a huge amount of talent. I will say that you know, I think VTO is a fantastic player. He's not the easiest jungler in the world he's not the easiest mid laner in the world to jungle for because of how he likes to play his lane. But yeah, I mean, if you want to ask, what were Vitality's issues this split. You know, it's very clearly in how they were playing jungle mid. It's very clearly in how they were playing jungle support. They've recognized the issues, and now they've made the changes necessary. And, you know, from everything I've heard about Douglas, he's a good guy, but, you know, it's the issue, right? And that's what Fnatic exploited in this series.
All right, let's dive into that, because actually those are some things I want to talk about. Because what I also enjoy is I'm a big fan of doing multi-factor analysis, guys. You don't just take one component, like this guy is the better support, and then put him in. I mean, spoiler, when we talk about Heretics, that's obviously even going to be a factor there, isn't it? Like, a lot of people did think Kaiser was doing well, but the point is, what does he bring to the team? If you don't know, if you know the LCK, here's the obvious analogy that when we give that one is, that's why, even though I think Delight's way better than Lehens, they brought Lehens in because they were firing peanuts. They had no shot calling, so they wanted Lehens to come in. So if you know how it works in team dynamics, some of these moves are more than just a one-for-one. So when you say that, that's a point that I feel like was really missed about this team, this split. Remember, last split was one, I mean, it was probably the worst, but it was one of the nightmare fuel Hillersang splits. It was one of those ones where there isn't the upside, like there's not the caps to the claps to the craps. It's just craps all day long in that analogy. And he's just inting the fuck out the game. And in fact, it made people like Kazi look mega elo held. But the problem is, this split, I wouldn't say he played a great split as a support, but he played a lot better. He just didn't have those deaths, right? And in doing so, you did see Kazi was a little bit more unlocked. He could do a lot more of the game. But as you said, the synergy people missed isn't jungle AD, it's jungle support. And so if you have an inexperienced jungler who's not good on many champions, and quite frankly, sometimes looked a bit lost in sort of the plan, as it were, you can have a really hard time playing with Hillersang. Like, Hillersang's a very particular type of support. And you kind of got, like, I get the sense from talking to his teammates, you have to kind of read his mind. He's not going to just tell you, like, here's how I'm going to do it. Because he doesn't know himself. He's kind of an instinct player, right? So it's not just that Douglas on his own was like bad. It's that it seems like it was a bad fit for those two.
Sure, of course. And I mean, I think it's very telling. You know, what are the two champions that they're doing best on? Rell can immediately follow, even if you're late. And Maokai, I mean, anyone can engage on Maokai, right? Yes. So the champions which require that split second decision making, like, they just didn't win on. And yeah, I mean, I fully agree on your Hillersang take.
And then the other angle I wanted to ask about was the player I'd said, oh, actually, let's just do Kazi first. Because here's the thing, you know what? You've been around a long time, but I'm not going to give you it all at once. Here's what I'll say. You did identify something in Kazi that was special, right? I saw him when he was at the EU Masters before he came. Look, he was good. But, like, I never thought he was going to be some, like, monster player. Like, he was good in that first year. But I remember the year they won the championship. I'll always tell people this. There's a reason they were mega at playing from behind, because Kazi was not some monster ADC. And in fact, famously, this is the classic meme, he used to just die on the midwave inexplicably. So even though people told me all these things, oh, but in team fights, you know, he picks the target and stuff, right? I will give him credit, as I did last year, that I do think the, like, ceiling of his game is now very impressive. Like, I say he's like the EU version of an LPL ADC for me. But the thing that's really impressed me now, I've seen him in a different squad, even after the Mad Lions won last year without Niski, is, mate, when I see him now, the first thing I think is, mate, the floor on his game has gotten way better. Like, there aren't those mistakes like that. There aren't those deaths for no reason. In fact, he can himself play sort of painted in a corner Viper-esque, where he has to just do everything right. And I feel like there's a lot of maturation and growth must have happened to this guy. What do you think of the Kazi of today?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was always the thing about Kazi, right? Like, he's, despite his Twitter persona, you know, like, he likes to play into that playfulness, but, like, he's very, very smart about the game. You know, he's a really good shot caller. I think I talked about this, you know, on your shows before, where on Mad Lions, Humanoid was the one who was making the snap second calls, but Kazi was providing a lot of the structure. And yeah, I mean, he's added those flaws to the game, but he's been better on midwave, but also he's picked things. The meta has developed in a way which has benefited him as well. Like, he's the only mid lane, he's the only AD carry who has shown on stage that he's a really good TF player in Europe. You know, he can play TF, he can go and aid in those rotations. He's always been the type of guy who's willing to flash in team fights, you know, and for better or worse. But now I think, like, his snap second, split second decision making is better. And, you know, if he's the one who's flashing in, and he has two players who are more than capable of cleaning up behind, you know, like Vito is definitely the type of player who's better when he's going second into a team fight. And Kazi, you know, the balance on this Vitality team is very, very solid. And obviously that gives Kazi a little bit more agency to be able to play to his limits. So yeah, I agree.
And then to ask about Fortot, I'll just put it this way. This is one of the players, like people might lag on last year's Vitality to make fun of like Bo and Opset because they were mega hyped and obviously the team came 10th. The player I felt the worst for wasn't even them. I mean, friends were upset. I even told me I feel bad for the Fortot guy. Like this is another player moved to another region, speaking in a second language, even had one teammate that's speaking second language English and bought to him. I mean, technically they all are. The thing is about Fortot, I used to look at his game and not only was he having to speak second language English in a totally different region. And by the way, if people don't know, like Koreans like learn English, but they're not having to use it daily and be fluent in it when they're in Korea. So I thought this guy's had a really tough task. And then in the games, yeah, look, you could watch, and as a classic top laner, Alfari used to get this all the time, people would go, who cares that you won lane or did well in your matchup? What did you do in the team fight? And I used to be like, bro, we don't even know like if he has good comms given to him. We don't know if these players can understand what he wants to do in the game. So I felt like he had one of the toughest tasks ever. So when I have a player like that, Peter, and I think the team's breaking down, I try to look at it like a solo queue game and ask, right, if this guy doesn't have great comms given to him, great shot calling, if there's not great synergies, what can he do with the pieces he's given? If you give him these champions, you give him these lanes, I think this guy, he smurfs sometimes, mate. I think I've seen the same thing this year. Even when there's games they've lost, sometimes this guy just does the business. And I keep saying this to people. I don't really know if LCK cares about LEC anymore. I do think they think we're below them, unfortunately. But if you guys keep fucking around and think this guy sucks in Europe, some LCK coach with half a brain's going to see him and just say, come back home, mate. Like, we could just put you in a team tomorrow. And I think he could be in like a fucking damn one type team. He could be in a good team. Like, this guy has talent. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he has talent for sure. I mean, I'm 95% sure. Wait, let me think. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's the only import. So when I came back to Europe, there were like 7 or 8 imports within the league, and he's the only one that's still here. I mean, Chasey isn't here anymore. Bo, if rumors are to believe, is out. Evie and Ruby aren't here anymore.
No, but you're right, because Malran's gone. I think they're all gone, yeah,
they're all gone, right? And he's and Noah obviously joined later, right? He wasn't there from the start of the year, right? So like everyone else is gone, but he's the guy, he's still here, he's consistent. You know, he has one or two champions he's not the strongest on, but like he's very, very consistent. He has a good Jace, which is like a rarity in Europe.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, he has a good TF, and he's been very, very solid. I think because of the language barrier, it makes it kind of hard for them to play strong side top, but he's been solid for sure.
Because he's another person I look to and I think, mate, if this jungler coming in isn't just hands, he's got a brain, this is another player that could just be unlocked. Like you'll say, like one of the nightmares this guy has, as you say, is he's one of the only Western players I would ever even let lock a fucking Jace in, because the rest of them, like even if they win the lane, they don't play LPL style. They'll never use it around the map and just clean up, right? If you could unlock this guy, he could win some games for you. He could just be the main carry.
Yeah, I mean, when Vitality had their deep run in playoffs, I think when they were top 4, he was for sure the best player on that team.
Oh, he was, yes.
And yeah, I mean, like I said, he's here, he's still around, he's consistent. Obviously, I hope it doesn't work out for the benefits of everything. he's definitely a strong guy. I mean, a strong player. It's like sometimes the players off, sometimes not the strongest on off meta picks. You know, his Smolder was not the best. He can play the whole range of things. You know, but the question is, when you have Kazi and you have Photon on your team, how are you not managing to do better? You know, and top 4, you know, as a coach who's top 6, it's a bit much for me to say, yes. But you know, obviously Vitality recognized they came 5th, 6th. Fourth. They won their 5th, 6th, but they came 4th, and they're like, okay, we still need to make an improvement if we want to go and compete. And yeah, let's see how it works out for them. I mean, they definitely have strong pieces, for sure.
By the way, being as you brought the topic up, I do want to ask about this. How does Chasey manage to win the fucking LEC and then not even be in the LEC the following year? Like, look, I was never someone who thought he was, like, insane. But I tell you what, I did used to think, maybe he's a bit coin flippy, but he has games he carries too. And he had lanes he carries. Yep. Certainly had champions he was good. So how does a guy just end up not completely in the LEC?
I mean, you know, it sucks that he has a Korean passport.
Okay.
I mean, let's leave it there. You know, maybe if he had a more appropriate passport, you know, maybe he would have an LEC team.
Okay. Right. What about then? Let's just do a little bit about your team because people want to know this, right? So first things first, let's just do this whole topic. You're a big boy. You can figure out how to answer it and you can figure out what not to answer. I'll give you that. I'll always give you that space, mate. So the problem goes that the drama around the Perks replacement basically took over even any analysis about the replacement because, unfortunately, it kind of looked like internally there was some sort of disagreement. I mean, remember that statement Jankos made, which people couldn't tell. Is he doing it because Perks is his mate and his old like, legendary player who helped him go to the top, or is he doing it because actually he's kind of shocked this move has happened? And it was kind of implied. I mean, basically, it's what was even suggested in that video. It's kind of implied this wasn't like, right, at the end of the last split, we sat down, we had the whiteboard, we said, like you're saying about Vitality, this wasn't a good enough placing for us, we need to level up, so what's the position we could change? Here's the player that would improve, you know, system dynamics in the team and the mid lane. So it's actually going to be Perks for Zverev, who they'd had a million years waiting in the background. It wasn't that, apparently. Apparently, it was some sort of, like, late-in-the-game call in the boot camp. It just happened. Now, well, we'll see. This is why it's a perfect time to ask about it. Yeah. I think it's worked out. It's looked awesome. We can get that in a second. But just give me, what are your initial thoughts of, like, making this change in the team?
Okay. So I think first thing we can go and say is, firstly, it wasn't planned, right? And you can tell it wasn't planned because, I'll be clear, Heretics this split had 16 scrim days. People were sick, but basically, you know, we are a team that made best of threes. We made the second round of best of threes, and we've had 16 scrim days as a team of five. So it wasn't planned.
I'm guessing another team would have had, like, another week or something before as well, right?
Two weeks. So first thing. Second thing. I think that I think that Zwairu is a player that Heretics have had for a long time. I think that, you know, I see a lot of people now that he's had a successful split coming out and saying, oh, you know, he should have been in the team from you know, winter 2023.
Sure.
I don't know how much I'm at liberty to comment about that, but basically I would say that that with the information Heretics had at the start of winter 2023, that wouldn't have been the right time, but definitely, you know, from summer 2023 onwards, he's somebody that the team had really close eyes on. And he, I will say, you know, maybe Heretics make the finals of EU Masters in the first split of 2023, he's playing in LEC in summer. You know, maybe if maybe if scrims are like slightly better, or if like one thing goes in slightly different, he there's a chance he would have been promoted in summer. There's a chance he would be promoted in winter. It's always been really, really on the edge, with, you know, some people arguing in his favor, some people arguing against, but it's been really, really close. So this is a guy, he has the right mentality for LEC. When you have a rookie that comes into the league, you can tell immediately if they have a chance to succeed, right? Because a rookie, they'll come into the league, they'll be surrounded by all these veterans, and they'll be thinking, holy shit, I can be carried by these guys, I can just be my normal self. And I can just sit here and be a passenger. And when things start to go wrong, you know, it's kind of a victim mentality. You're like, oh no, woe is me. I'm surrounded by all of these people. Why are they not carrying me as hard as I thought that they were going to from the outside, you know? And Zwairu, you can tell immediately if a rookie doesn't have it, if this is the mentality they go into when things are rough. And things will always go rough, right? Like, there's, unless maybe G2, right? So he's never had that kind of like victim mentality. He's always been really, really proactive. You know, he's the type of guy who, you know, when we lost the BDS series, he's calling Trimby and Jankos. He's the guy who's saying to Trimby and Jankos, let's go office 9 p.m. tomorrow night. We're going to go and watch some games together. You know, we're not playing mid jungle support well. Let's go and talk about it. Let's go and talk about it as a three. And so to be clear, it's not just any random guy being promoted. It's like Zwairu, he has it, right? The question can be, why was he not promoted earlier? That's a very interesting question. Maybe for another day. Okay. So first things first. Second thing. There's a lot of people within the scene who know what happens, but who have a good idea of what's happened, but choose not to say anything about it because they don't want to damage their relationship with the players, right? And it's very easy for somebody from the outside to go and shit on an org and say, oh, you know, they're clueless, they have no idea what they're doing, and that kind of thing. What I would say is, these kind of decisions, a decision to promote a rookie over like a legend of the game, isn't something that just happens overnight. It's not like a, it's not something you take lightly, and it's not something that is done without multiple steps.
I mean, here's the analogy, classically, is this wasn't really like people think, like, you know, Perks just had some sort of argument and they were like, get out, you're fired, and it's like some crazy like tyrant. No, based on the things I'd heard, again, this is like the classic analogy, is the straw that broke the camel's back. There were other things in the background, could be performance related, could be anything else, and this was just like, this is the trigger moment where the decision is made.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an accurate way of describing it, right? And I would say, you know, it was frustrating from within the team, you know, that things turned out this way. But you know, I'm glad Arthur Zwaru showed his potential kind of in playoffs. But but like I said, you know, these kind of decisions from the outside, you know, maybe they're things that orgs can do to better communicate these kind of decisions and communicate logic. But you know, sometimes you don't want to say bad things about your employees. Sometimes you want to protect people. Sometimes you want to there's reasons why you can't share kind of everything openly, right? But in a case like this, it's easy to see, if you don't share everything, it's easy to see why people will rush to their own conclusions. The thing which shocked me a lot about the situation, though, is firstly, kind of almost everyone knows, I would say a lot of people know what happened, but people choose not to say that who are outside the org, right? Which is interesting as well. Like I said, it's not just anyone being promoted. It's a case of accumulation of things that happen for a long period of time. And you know, I think Arthur is. I would say that, okay, maybe I could talk about one more thing I could talk about. So Wanda talked a little bit about how the team is now a little bit more in terms of on the same page about how they kind of want to play the game. And one thing I will say about Arthur, about Zwaru, sorry, is he's very, very keen to play the game at a very, very fast pace. You know, he's the type of guy, he'll drop two waves on mid lane to dive bot. You know, if he can lose three CS on one wave to make sure bot lane is denied a plate in one wave, because he's sitting in fog, literally sitting in fog, not showing on the mid wave, not even rotating, but he's willing to like play around fog better. He's not going to greed his tempo, you know, to try to go and get a tower. You know, he plays the game very, very fast. He plays the game very, very LPL style almost, you know. He's more like the, he's more from the Doenbi school than the Chovy school, right? You know, on a team like this, with people like Trimby, with people like Jankos, who really, really want to play the game at a very, very high level, force the opponents to make mistakes, I think he's a really, really good fit. He is also playing with Trimby as well, so who takes on a lot of burden of shot calling. So maybe that obviously helps him as well. He's the type of guy who, if somebody makes a call, he will snap follow the call, right, like this, if it's required. Yeah, that's what I would say.
One thing I would say about this is, if we take some of the facts that you're addressing here, I think suddenly his split makes so much more sense. Like, if people remember, in the regular part of the split, he was kind of just all right. My point was, look, he's not having any Perks in games. That's a good factor. And it's allowing other people, like, you can see the Trimby factors clearly taking over the team and influencing it. But if I take the fact you just told me, essentially he started playing games, guys, with barely any scrim days. He's just playing with all these veteran players who have their own idea of the game, and he just has to go into LEC. So I don't blame him for just being okay. At that point in time, you're not hating on him. But the glow up in the playoffs, there's another fact people need to know. So one, this guy is 25 years old. He isn't a 17-year-old rookie. He's a rookie in the sense he hasn't been experienced in the LEC, but he's played the game a while, and I can tell you, it showed in the playoffs. His poise is way better than I would expect. Not just a rookie, but someone who didn't even get the first split to get out of your system. He just came into the playoffs, and then obviously he didn't play Azir at all in the regular split. It's one of his best champions ever, guys. When he was put onto the Azir, the glow up was real, mate. Like, he was just like not inting, he was to carry. In fact, there was even games where I saw where you lose him, where he was still doing work, mate. He was still proactive. He still looked like he was making play. Also, he didn't do the Azir that someone would do if they were a coward rookie, mate, which is you play very scared, you're always going backwards. He was going in, he was doing like the humanoid fucking mechanics moves on it. I love it when people play an Azir like that. So already I'm kind of in, mate. I bought in. What's this guy's, what's he doing? What's his impact?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think he's fearless. I think also it's worth saying that before playoffs, before the BDS series, Heretics were 224 in scrims going into the BDS series because we just had multiple people getting sick. You know, we had day after day after day where people would just be like, it would, you know, it, we were spreading the infection, you know, around to everyone. And I think there was something that that just like kind of clicked in him during that week where we were kind of like losing every scrim, you know, reviews were really hard. You know, maybe we should have just not scrim, but like, you know, it's a new patch, first playoffs, we're already behind in scrims, so we're trying to grind out the scrims. But at some point something clicked, which is like, you know, I need to carry because other people are sick, and if I don't carry, you know, who else is going to? Like, what happens if somebody else is sick on the weekend because it was just spreading? You know, he's a very gym focused guy. I don't think he gets sick that often, but that's what I would say about him. He's completely fearless. And I would say the one thing, like, for people that don't know Zwiver very, very well over the years, there's one thing which has always been, like, in terms of team fighting, he's always been like top two mid laners in the right. ERLs. You know, he's been LEC level. Like, if you'd asked me last year where he would have been a top five team fighting mid laner. But the thing that people have always criticized Wario for is, number one, his laning phase, and number two, kind of his movements on the map, right? I think his movements on the map over the time when I've worked with him on Heretics, and not because of me, but because of the entire staff and everything, has improved a lot. But there was always a question, is this guy good enough in lane to compete at the LEC level? And then, you know, oh, he's 25. If he was going to develop his laning phase, why hasn't he developed it now? And it's very obvious when you look at this guy, this is just the guy who needed to go and play caps in lane, play humanoid in lane, and just get fucked, right? Over and over again, so he can recognize where his flaws are, because there's a cap you reach in ERL that you can never get better than because you're just not being challenged in your laning phase. And I think this is kind of where he kind of reached, like, by the time he got to playoffs, it kind of clicked. And this is no secret, you know, like, he himself has gone on about like how rough his laning phase has been at points. But now I think now that he's kind of got it out of the system, now he's used to like the faster pace, you know, the more aggression, he knows when people are bluffing, he knows when he can push his limits. I think he has a lot of potential for summer. I don't know if he'll get there immediately, but he definitely, you know, I see signs that this laning phase issue is not something that can't be fixed. It was just a case of playing against stronger opposition, I think.
And then the other obvious team dynamic aspect I want to ask about is the addition of Trimby. But the way I'll ask it is this. If indeed it wasn't planned to remove perks, then I know Kaiser was your boy, a guy who had respect for him. You thought he could rehabilitate. I think he did rehabilitate him. Yes, you did a pretty good job there. It's just unfortunately, teams don't sign the players that often themselves at the moment. In fact, this Zero was the only player change that people don't know. So what I would say is this, as well as Trimby, sorry. These are the only player changes that happened. So if it is a world where last minute perks gets yoinked out, now all of a sudden it's even more valuable potentially to have Trimby, because people know, if you've ever heard a voice, never shuts the fuck up. It's even implied that's why he keeps getting booted from teams, even though if you're watching the server, he levels every team up and they get better and they become like a contender. So who is this guy? Because I noticed no one's ever had an angle on why does he keep getting removed, because to me the upside's clear, it's no one really knows what the downside is. So what has Trimby brought to Heretics?
I mean, I think that every player that leaves Rogue leaves with like a worse reputation. And like this is something which really, really troubles me, because I think on the reflection show we did, I talked about Inspired, where Inspired left Rogue with this like dreadful reputation. Yes. Of like he is the most toxic person on earth, he will destroy, he's like a team killer, he's going to destroy your team environment. And then when you meet him, sure, he's a bit direct, but he's not like, it's not like he's running down scrims or anything, you know, like some players I work with, right? And I think that this is kind of something that I saw with Trimby has this kind of reputation as well, that like, oh, you know, sometimes in a team environment, he's not that good in the team environment. But again, the same thing is Inspired. You know, he's a little bit. You know, Polish people can sometimes be a bit direct when they interact. Sure. But it's never coming from a bad place. And what I would say about Trimby is, firstly, you're right. He never stops talking. And I mean, at some point, you know, he has to. If he could talk like 80% of what he talks, he would be like the perfect support. Okay. But you know, his ideas are good. He's very He's very, very decisive. He always wants to fight no matter what. You know, sometimes maybe he can slow the pace down, but there's no question. He when you bring him into the team, he brings decisiveness. He brings he knows what he wants to do on the map. He's not the type of support. You know, for support, sometimes you need to kind of force your resets on the team. You know, you don't have vision, but your team wants to go and make an aggressive play, you have to be really decisive and say, no, I need this reset now. It's really important. Otherwise, you know, we'll get all this pressure, but we won't leave any vision behind. And I've seen a lot of supports kind of get bullied out of their resets, but Trimby will never be bullied out of his reset. You know, right. If he wants a reset, he's getting his reset and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's what I would say about Trimby. Trimby is somebody you will never lack decisiveness. The thing that I think at his best, he needs to. I think that the reason why Trimby is a legendary like ranged support player, you know, like Janna or Lux or all of these things that he's super, super good on, Lulu. You know, these champions are not champions where you kind of force, you know, you force the enemy to force onto you, and that kind of lets you play a backseat and kind of look at the map more. And I think that's something. You know, obviously Trimby new to the team. Obviously Trimby's also had the same issue. Come into a new team, had a roster change, and he's had to adapt to that as well. But I think he's definitely one of the most decisive people I've ever worked with. And I think, you know, he's also been the player who was, I think, kind of sick the most this split. So the fact he was able to put up these performances is a promising sign.
If we talk about BDS, I have to say, I actually think they underperformed this split. They absolutely could have been in that final. I mean, if you watch the series, that's a fucking robbery that Fnatic got away with that. I mean, look, they aided in the robbery. They sort of handed them the bag of money on the way out, as it were. But I really thought, like, there's a world they were in the final. In fact, it's one of the reasons why, even though it's reigniting the beef from last year, why Nuke just hates me on Twitter, because he knows that my take goes like this, and every player in BDS fucking hates this take. My take goes like this. I actually think they have like the fourth or fifth best roster in LEC, but I think that fucking striker and the coaching staff just work miracles, mate. Like, they have trained those players in a way where I've watched enough League to know when people are like macro geniuses or understand setups, or when they've been coached to do that. They've been coached to be on the same page. They've been coached, by the way, to know how to play around like the most idiosyncratic top laner ever, to play around people like Nuke, who on the one hand can look strong if you set him up in the right way, but he clearly, if you just dropped him into any random team, he wouldn't like just carry 1v9 out of nowhere. So they've got all these strange, they removed Crowney, who was the most surefire carry position. This is also another sign, they played through Adam last split, and now they came back to the Crowney style without Crowney, and the Ice guy did it. He was the stat stick ADC, but he was actually able to carry the games when they put him on those comps. And I keep telling people, the way they win these games, where essentially, like, they just catch throws and mistakes from the opponents, these are all just hallmarks of coaching, guys. So the problem then becomes, if you're the players, you don't want to hear that. You want to hear that, like, no, we're the best players. Like, I am the best top laner. Nuke wants me to tell him he's the third best mid laner in LEC, and that, you know, he's like a future star. And they don't want to hear that Ice is just doing his job. It's like, no, he's a great import. So I get why the players get offended by this, but this is my question to you. The reason that they have the beef with me goes like this. When I see that team, I think to myself, mate, if you could shuffle some of the rosters up and this team stayed together, but they were like the fourth best team, so they were like on the outskirts of competing for the world spot, but not like a top world spot, but you know, they get to go and play and then prove themselves, then LEC would be an amazing region. We'd be so strong because they're amazing with that style at gatekeeping teams that make mistakes. You can even be a better puncher like Fnatic, and if you make mistakes, they'll catch you. This team will kill you. They will win the team fight against you. So I actually thought, right, to me, the problem becomes last split and this split, if they're sort of spiritually the second best team, we're in kind of a tough spot in the region, because if they can gatekeep us like that, boys, what do you think is going to happen when an LCK elite team comes and plays us around an objective or in a team fight? You know what I mean? Like, I start to worry. So where are you at on actually some of the players in BDS and some of the style? What's your take? I'm sure you have some disagreements, so give me them.
I'm still not convinced that Ice is an upgrade on Crowney.
Oh, I don't think so either, but I know why they don't ever want Crowney again. That's nothing to do with the game, mate. So.
Sure.
That's not an option in that case.
What I would say, though, for BDS is I kind of agree with you for BDS last year, but I think that there's one player we didn't talk about, which was Labrov. And okay. I think that the difference between BDS last year and BDS this year is that Labrov has kind of gone from like a mid-tier support player, you know, maybe overshadowed by stronger teammates, to being like one of the best supports.
Some people think he is the best, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually...
It carries a lot of games,
yeah,
man.
I could see it. I could see it. Yeah. I could see it. This game. Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. I mean, all pro voting is coming soon. So, yeah, actually, I could see it. But he gives BDS, like, this kind of X factor. Like, the way that he plays his map movements in the mid game, even I would say that he had been even better than Mickey this split. You know, he knows when he needs to be on the side lane. BDS are kind of the only team besides G2 in the league that can pull off a proper 2-1-2. You know, they know when to play side into mid. They know how to play mid into side. You know, they know how to play. Like, you cannot let this guy. Before with BDS, you could just like wait and outscale, and you know they were going to try to catch your throw. But if you didn't throw, you could scale into the game, provided you didn't give them too many dragons early. But I think the difference this year is that Labrov now gives them kind of like an X factor. He'll do something crazy, right? He's not gonna do something as crazy as Hillisang, but he's gonna kind of trap you on the side lane. He's gonna like be annoying, right? He's gonna play with fog really, really well. And I think the best example of this is the BDS Fnatic. There was a second game BDS Fnatic, and Fnatic picked Maokai Lulu as their jungle support, which, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about Fnatic later, but you should never pick Maokai Lulu if you're Fnatic, which on paper is really, really good, right? Like, Maokai Lulu, they're strong champions, they have good synergy, you know, they're going to teamfight well. But the problem is, it's very, very hard for a Maokai Lulu to stop a Rakan being able to do what he wants to do in the mid-game. You know, like, they're really good at sitting on an objective and forcing you to face check into you, and forcing you to come into kind of their zone of control. But, you know, a Lulu Maokai is not sitting 2v1 against an AD carry on midway. You know, maybe you have your AD carry, your support, and your jungler there. It's going to be really, really hard for you to force with numbers advantage on midwave, which means that Rakan now can do whatever he wants to do on the side lane, knowing that you're not going to be able to dive his AD carry underneath the mid lane turret, and he just destroyed the entire game with his map movements. And I think that's the thing that BDS have gained. You must have tools to fight BDS, because if you don't, their Labrov is going to get you. Or you need to be able to match his rotations. And I think that's what makes BDS scary. Is that a coaching thing? Is that a team comfort thing? It's hard to say. But for sure, he's not the player that he was 2 years ago, right? For sure.
And then another player I have to ask about, because I just feel like, kind of a fitting analogy, he is the problem child of LEC. That works on so many levels. Obviously, it's Adam, right? Because you know what, Peter? What people will never know about me is, it's not that when I say it's a persona, it's all fake. I always give this analogy. I just put more mustard on the hot dog. It's still a fucking hot dog. Like, I'm still going to give you the real meat and veg, as it were, and the truth of what I think. So look, I did think Adam was a bit of a joke when he first came in the league. He was someone who played only those champions, and he relied that you just hadn't played into those champions, and that if you were a top player, you actually thought, what the fuck is he picking this for? I'll beat this. Like, I played it once in solo queue ever, and then you got beat by him. On that team, where they had, by the way, the best bot lane, you were just getting beat, and he had Whipple jungling out of his mind. He had the best setup I've ever seen. Then when he got booted to BDS originally, there's a reason they kicked him out. He actually just looked like, man, he's a fucking liability if you put this guy in the game. Like, even on his champions, he could lose the game and lose the lane and fucking pressure too much, get ganked all day long. Then when he came to last year, they were figuring out how to use that, though. The difference is, he got into this coach. I thought it was quite interesting the way they were using him, putting him in and out, the way they would sort of, I mean, the joke is, I always make fun of Monty, because Monty's so generous in trying to think strategically. He would make it sound like it was the game plan for Adam to play pushed up. So it's like, he's making an island, and what he's doing is drawing pressure so that Crowley can carry the bot. And I was like, Monty, I wish that was true, mate, but I guarantee you, if I drop Adam in any other team with no bot lane, he's doing the same anyway. The difference this year, and this is how cursed it actually seems his career is the week before he got benched, I finally gave it up to him on Twitter. I said last, I actually think he's the best top in LEC now. He's playing, they can play through him. He actually had some meta champions. It wasn't a joke if he went to a Sion or a Renekton or something. He can actually play that out and win the game from it. He was more reliable. Then he got benched. And I don't feel like the peak player I saw came back. Like, I've seen it. Now he feels that you roll a dice again. You know, maybe you get a good game here and there. That's why I feel like they don't, I mean, I know the meta change, but they don't play around him always. So where is Adam at for you? He's obviously such a difficult player to even figure out.
I mean, when you have Adam, when you're playing against Adam, top lane counter pick is really valuable. And I mean, in the Fnatic series, you know, game one, they pick, the enemy team picked TF, strongest champion on, strongest top lane champion on the patch with Rek'Sai out. And they just murdered him. They just picked like Sejuani Yasuo into TF, and they just camped him to the point where he was like 50 CS down. And you know, that's what I would say about Adam. I think Adam is he loves to push his limits. But the annoying thing about Adam is if he gets an advantage now, he doesn't push his advantage top lane 1v1. He goes to mid lane, he goes to jungle, he like makes the enemy jungler's life hell. He'll like fight you level 1, 2v1 when you're leashing blue buff or something like this. He'll always do things which he's very, very hard to predict. And I think that sometimes the thing with Adam is he doing something which is... what's the rationale behind what he's doing? You know, is he being cheesy for the sake of being cheesy, or is he somebody who is like, how are they refining what he wants to do in the game? And I think this is where, like, this is why with Labrov, it's hard to work out: is this Labrov's improvement, or is this like Adam's improvement for getting Labrov to play around him better? Because last year, yes, Adam would just go to silent and he would literally die. And like, if you were behind against BDS and you weren't sure what to do, go and camp Adam, right? Like, it's that simple, right? Because Nuke isn't going to die, you know, he's just going to play safe, yes, on the side lane. So you just go and kill Adam. But this split, like, you try to do that and Shio and Labrov are in the bush behind him. Or like, you know, they'll play into his lane and then he'll immediately rotate. And I think that they found a way to play around him. I have no idea why they benched him before.
Who knows? Before the, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, it was good for Mad Lions for sure. I mean, sure. It helped them. but it was I mean, this playoffs they should have beaten Fnatic 3-0. And then they beat MSI, and then who knows? You know, so yeah.
Right, if we move on now and talk a bit about Fnatic, I have to just start in one place. I know the funny thing about this team is you can absolutely go into all five players. It's quite interesting. I actually think it's quite interesting the way they've evolved from last split, and they showed like a little bit more consistency, even though they can still... Every series with these guys, they're never going to 3-0 anyone, mate. Like, I don't think this team could 3-0 any team in the league, is the joke, in a best of five. Because the problem is, this is what I keep pointing out. This is where people go on results when they build their narratives, not on the game and build the narratives out the game. Because what happens is when they win a game and they do all pop off and you have like a Jhun performance mixed with Razorc demon mode all over the map, Humanoid does like some fucking Azir shenanigans, Oskarin and wins the top lane, everyone wants to go like, wow, look at this. The great thing about them is like their firepower, they're willing to fight, they're willing to take the fights and force the fights and extend the fights. And it's like, bro, that's how they lose every game too. Like, go watch all the games they lose. Like, this is the team that, like, that's why I was so scared BDS was going to beat them, mate. I was like, this is the team where they could knock BDS the fuck out, but essentially, if BDS is like the counterpuncher in this analogy, they're going to get a lot of fucking chances to counterpunch. They're going to get a lot of moments where you're going to be sat like in the chalk or in the fucking brush. Like, I wish they didn't go into us. And they're going to, Fnatic's going to come into you. They're just going to go for that fight. So the first player along this style, I feel like I have to ask you about, is we've seen Razorc play for years now. For me, every season he gets better, mate. It's why actually, yep, I think people did correctly identify him as kind of a stud on that Misfits team. And each year he seems to add a little bit more to his game. And for me, it's like, he's what they follow. He's the tip of the spear on this team. What do you think about Fnatic and Razor?
Okay, so first thing, disclaimer, I'm Heretics coach, so obviously every Heretics player is top five, you know, in the league, etc. Okay, so okay, leaving that aside, non-Heretics players in the league, Razor is the second best player in the LEC. Like, Caps is number one and Razorc is number two. And the reason why I give Fnatic the chance to cause some upsets internationally is because they have Razorc on their team and he can always do something crazy in the early game. And, you know, I think before Worlds, we talked about contracts on NRG. You know, maybe NRG can shock some people because they have a jungler who can be aggressive, who could do crazy things, who can like snowball game out of control. And Razorc is... He's become more creative. I think when he came into the LEC, he's somebody when he was in ERLs, he had a reputation of being not the most confident person, right? But he's definitely come into his own this split. I think he's been incredible. And I think that basically in the BDS series, the two games that BDS won, they basically took him out of the game. First game, because they had a really smart plan for how they were going to play around top jungle to stop him being able to play. Second game, because Fnatic picked him on Maokai, which you should never put Razorc on in this Fnatic team. Sure. You know, maybe in a different team. Because this Fnatic team, everyone is just going to fight to the death in their lanes, right? They're going to play super aggressively, so you need a jungler who can take advantage of that, and Maokai is not that jungler. But then from that point onwards, he grew and grew into the series. And, you know, he was, I think, a really, really key factor for them beating BDS. But then you look at the finals, and I hate the lane swap meta because... not because I hate lane swaps. I love lane swaps, right? Like, as a coach, it's super, super fun. You can look at all the strategic stuff. But G2 basically won the final by default because they kept lane swapping. Oscar had zero clue what to do in the lane swap. He was so bad. None of those games were like standard lanes. You know, there were like three lane swap games, and one of them, the fourth game, was like Broken Blade, open bot, and then TP top after like making a player level one, right? And basically, Oscar solo loses the game because he doesn't push the wave into the tower. So before he TPs, Broken Blade TPs back to a frozen lane and is in a really, really strong position. Like, it's literally solo lost at 2:15 into the game because Oscar literally doesn't know what to do in these situations because maybe he's never experienced them. Totally maybe,
useful, yeah.
But by lane swapping, G2 take away everything Fnatic is good for in the early game. You know, Fnatic want to fight you to the death, and they want Razok to do unpredictable things and attack the enemy jungler. And if you're lane swapping, you know where Razok is going to be. You know, maybe Broken Blade shouldn't die to the four-man dive, you know, multiple times in the series, but you know that Razok has no ability to, like, be unpredictable on the map. He has to be with his on his strong side of the map because, you know, you're lane swapping, so you can't go to the weak side of the map because enemy team is going to be outnumber you 3-on-1 or 3-on-2, right? So you can't do anything there. So they know where he is at all times. They know he has to show. They take away all of his unpredictability. They take away all of Fnatic's ability to snowball. And even in the first game, where they have this like massive, massive lead, they're not able to do anything with it because the gold is not kind of in the right places. And if Razok, I just wish G2 and Fnatic had played each other like in standard lanes, so I could get a good idea of where Fnatic are. Because I feel like Fnatic have the potential to really, really do damage at this MSI. They're not gonna stomp Gen.G, right? Like, I'm not saying they're gonna 3-0 Gen.G, right?
But they can win games though, right?
They can definitely win games. Like, I would be shocked if Fnatic got 3-0'd by any team at MSI, right? Because unless the enemy team finds a way to shut down Razor, but I can't judge this because this is a team that should have lost 3-0 to BDS, but then again, they self-sabotage themselves. So, you know, and then they managed to reverse sweep. This is a team that, you know, was in a losing position against Heretics in game two.
They could have lost a lot of these series, yeah. Sure.
and then against G2, we didn't get a final because G2, like, refused to play the game properly. You know, that's as a criticism of G2. Sure. No, fuck that. You know, just go and win your championship. You know, if you have a free championship, sure, go and win it, right? But yeah, like, Razok is the key man, and at MSI, we'll see. Like, I'm really interested to see how T1, you know, try to attack him. It'll be really interesting.
I have to ask, because obviously, disclaimer, Peter Dunn was the Mad Lions coach, so your boy Humanoid. I have to ask this question, Peter. So there's a classic saying I am very often wanted to repeat, and it goes like this. You'll have heard it before. If you give a man a reputation as an early riser, he can sleep till noon. And I feel like, man alive, has Humanoid fucking dined out on those, not only the championships back in the day, but also all those international globes. Because he's had, when he goes international, he has those like one or two games where he pops off, even against the T1s and the EDGs of the world. It means that everyone goes, it's always in him. He's got that dog in him, man. And they're doing that right. And so every time it's the LEC, bro, even in the playoffs, he can have a game where he just doesn't do anything, or he loses, or he gets clapped early in the game. But it doesn't matter. As long as the next game is like, put him on the Azir, put him on his Corki, let him go off. If he carries, everyone's like, he's back. It's Humanoid. Humanoid time, baby. And it's like, he never actually gets the diss. Dude, remember when Prime Caps was winning all the championships and people were still like, well, you know, there's Claps and there's Craps. Like, dude, everyone just goes, it's just Humanoid, and they forgive every single game. So where is this guy at right now? Because I feel like he's the hardest player in LEC to rank. Is he actually like the fourth best player in LEC? Is he actually like the fucking fourth best mid lane? Like, who the fuck? You tell me, what do you think of this guy?
I mean... Okay, so first thing for Humanoid, he's always been shit at best of ones, but in Spring Split, he was really good at best of ones, because clearly, like, you could argue that he's the reason that they lost the Mad Lions, right, in the winter playoffs, right, in the third, fourth, Third, fourth match. Right. So he made a key mistake, which led to them losing that series. Right. So he came in super motivated and he was like crushing everyone. Like we beat Fnatic, but they were 5K gold ahead. Right. And we had Smolder and we smoldered them. But like, this guy, he came in really, really motivated. Week three, Fnatic seemed to like kind of tail off. There are rumors that some of their players were sick behind the scenes. I it's really hard to say as a coach, but definitely like things seemed to be, he didn't seem to be his normal self. And then like the thing about Humanoid is his decision making is always good in the mid game. Early game, sometimes he pushes his limits too much, but you know, I think that basically this team that he has around him, I feel like him and Oscar don't have really good synergy. Like they don't see the game in the same way. They group at weird times. Like they team fight in like kind of weird ways. And I think Fnatic are at their best when the enemy team is just five people in front of them. Nobody's trying to flank them. You know, there's no pressure to make the right decision. Just press the go button, you know, maybe they just should pick Sivir, you know, just Sivir ult, just run at the enemy team, just jump on them and just hope to outplay with your mechanics, right? But I think this is a lot because, like, Oscar, I feel that Oscar sometimes he's in the wrong, he feels pressured to do things, like he's really, really... He'll TP too early into a situation on the map, sure. Or he won't push a wave that he's supposed to wave, or he'll go on the wrong side in the team fight or something like this, right? And I think sometimes I wonder how much agency he has in this team to make the calls himself, right? So obviously we know from the voice comms last year that Trimby was doing a lot of micromanagement, right? So it helped. Fix a lot of the synergy, like the humanoid Razork synergy and the like the Oscar humanoid synergy, but I feel that like they're on the wrong page a lot in the mid game, and that leads to Fnatic will get early game leads because of Razork and because of how they draft, and then like in the mid game something will go wrong, and when it goes wrong it's normally because either Oscar or humanoid are being too passive or too aggressive at weird intervals,
right?
So how much of that is on Humanoid? How much of that is on Oscar? Maybe more of it should be on Humanoid because Oscar's still like kind of a semi-rookie,
yeah.
And Humanoid's a veteran, but you know, it's hard to say. You know, I could just see the conclusion, like what happened as a result.
If we talk about G2, the first place I want to start, and I always stress this, is it's easy to look at the roster and go, fucking hell, like, isn't this like almost the best player at every role? Although actually this split was a little bit different, I will say. Maybe we'll get into that in a second. But you look at the like talents they have, and a naive fan who doesn't understand what coaching is would go, well, anyone would win with that team. And it's like, here's what's brilliant though, guys. Even though I will put the disclaimer that having all those talents is really fucking insane in a draft if you're a coach. Like, you're not working with like, you know, two or three floor charts, like, shit, I hope they don't take my, like, pinch player. You're working with a scenario where you can fucking roll, you can flex picks, you have ridiculous, like, especially when Mickey was at his prime, you have picks that don't even play fucking support that you can take, right? You have all these different picks you can do, right? So that certainly, he's working with the most. But, mate, if people think it's just players winning these championships, each split, I'm seeing, like, a Dylan Falco masterclass in terms of, like, what he comes in with the game plan and what he does in the draft. Like, as you said, in this particular case, it wasn't even about just like baiting you in the draft like he usually does. In this case, he actually just made it so that like the other team, like the reason why Fnatic didn't have a chance to win the final is, like you say, in those early games, they had no clue what was happening. Like they essentially didn't even get the chance to play League of Legends and actually do what I'm sure they did in all the scrims and were ready for. So I feel like, again, like it's like you say, look, if you're an observer of the game, it wasn't an amazing final and it wasn't one you'd be like, I'm going to go back and watch that one again. Wow, I can't wait to see what happens. Because as you say, once you see that they can't respond to the lane swaps, you're actually like, How is Fnatic going to win this game? Especially because it's G2. Like, they've got caps. They've got fucking Ansama. Like, it's going to be incredibly hard. So give me some thoughts as a coach on this aspect. Because I feel like, again, as you say, if you can take a free championship, you just take it.
Yeah. I mean, basically, they should have won 4-0. Like, the first game that they lost, it's literally Broken Blade. Like, so Xin Zhao, he gives Xin Zhao a dash over the wall in a dragon fight, which there's no, like, they have Veigar, they have Sion, and they have to play around Veigar Cage, right? And the Broken Blade steps up for literally no reason, lets Razzle jump over a wall with Xin Zhao dash, which he should never be allowed to do, and get into his backline, right? So it's they literally lose the game off one misplay, which is, you know, kind of your tank positioning slightly too aggressively, but it's just a minor misplay, and they've got smashed in the early game, but they should have won that game too. Like it wasn't. Let's be clear, this was a 3-1 final, and yes, G2 had some happy fun times when they're like 8k gold ahead or something like this, where Caps is over pushing a side lane, but Fnatic would never had a chance to win this series because of the response in late swap. And this is, I think, obviously, some of this is, obviously, we know Mickey and we know Caps. I don't know the other G2 members so well, but I know Mickey and Caps have, like, really, really, like, insane game knowledge. They're really, like, creative. They try to incorporate a lot of things, right? Like, one thing I've heard from Mickey's teammates is he is obsessed with ward placement. Like, he will literally, like, spend, yeah, a lot of time just trying to argue the benefit of placing a ward in one spot versus a spot which is like very, very close by and fills a similar role, but in one specific situation is like better than this. So, you know, to have as a coach, to have a support that and a mid who care a lot about all of these things, it's a big, big benefit. That said, G2 were really, really prepped for this final. And, you know, people, I agree that, look, Dylan, as a drafting coach, has the easiest job in the LEC. Let's be clear, right? But we know that Dylan is a good coach for drafting, not because of the times he spent on Fnatic and the times he spent on G2. It's the times he spent on Schalke, right? Yes. Where he didn't have a lot. And that's often, you know, sometimes I think coaches who only work with the top teams, it's really hard to see what they do and when they're challenged. But Dylan has proven himself multiple times on different rosters, on different levels of roster. And, you know, it's really, really clear in this series that maybe G2 could have won. I think G2 are still favored against Fnatic playing fair, but like definitely this was like a coaching. The reason why they destroyed Fnatic is a coaching advantage, I would say.
Well, let me ask about some of the players though, because I feel like one of the reasons why I also really did want to just see a straight up proper best of five between Fnatic and G2 is because, as we've just described, some of the players on Fnatic are like, in terms of Razorg, I mean, he is better than Ike, in my opinion. He has to do more. And you just look at their team, they have punching power, they have firepower. That's a key upside for them as a team. But actually, one player I want to ask about is, look, that was a brilliant wax lyrical about Mickey X, but this has been a pretty rough Mickey X split though, right? Like, this isn't a split where he's the MVP, but that way.
Yeah, for sure. I think that he's had a really, really rough split. I have no idea why. I mean, when we say rough split, we mean like top four, sure, or top five, okay, fourth in the league, okay, you know, right? Sure. Like, I mean, it's all relative.
Yes.
But it's a bit puzzling. We'll see how he does internationally. I really couldn't place it for why, but maybe it's, I think the other teams in the past, other teams were too focused maybe on shutting down Caps, whereas they saw, okay, you try to shut down Caps, what's going to happen is Mickey, they're going to get priority 2v2 bot, Mickey's going to come to mid and he's going to like alleviate that. So I think teams started like focusing more on shutting down the bot lane, and then that meant that Mickey couldn't really play the game that he wanted to in the early game. He had some really kind of questionable ganks to deaths this split. Deaths to ganks, sorry, this split. But as a result, Caps has just been able to do whatever he wanted. And, you know, I think that's a problem with G2. You can't shut down both Mickey and Caps, at least in Europe. So we'll have to see how things go internationally, because I can guarantee you, looking at the mids who are at MSI, they're going to be playing through mid. So the question is, Mickey, how is the 2v2 bot going to work against these Asian bot lanes? And if they get the advantage, how is Mickey going to be able to influence the map? Because, again, Yike is no longer a rookie, right? So this is, last year, he had some games at international events where he was kind of outshone by other international junglers. Some of that, you know, he was sick at Worlds, you know, G2 have talked about this. But now he's not a rookie anymore. So how is he going to use, because Caps isn't going to be allowed to play internationally. Like, Asian teams are not stupid. They've made the mistakes in the past. They are not going to let him play the game. So the question is, how can Yike and Mickey make up for the fact that all that attention from Asian teams is going to go mid, and we'll learn a lot about how good G2 really are at this international event, because, you know, Caps over pushing a side lane and dying and giving like Fnatic massive shutdown and multiple objectives back into a game when they're 6k gold ahead, when G2 are already 6k gold ahead and the game is already won, is not going to tell us anything, right? It's how Mickey and Yike at MSI and Razork for Fnatic are the European players. We will really learn how strong our region is based on how those guys do against the international competition.
By the way, the other thing I'll point out, if someone's more of a casual viewer and they can't remember the whole split, is the way you also know G2 was playing with their food is they're fucking letting people get pentakills before the game ends intentionally. Like that, if it was any other team, half the segment now would be about how stupid that is and level. But it's like, I can't even blame them. They just get away with it every time, mate. So fair enough. You can make that work. It is kind of gangster. I can't lie. I know why players like to do it. It's like extra disrespect. On the Caps point, though, the reason why it makes perfect sense, though, I agree, Peter. It's totally logical that these jungle supports are just going to fucking gangbang Caps internationally. Like, you should. You'd be a fool not to, because here's the problem with doing evaluation split to split, week to week, is people themselves, even though they will do the hot take reaction to, like, a guy has a bad 0-2 week, a guy has an insane 3-2-0 week back in the day in LEC, they don't ever do that with their favourite players. So what happens is, people act like if Faker actually smurfed and played like Chovy did, that I'd be hating on him, like, oh, he's not that good. No, that's when I'd be like, he's back. Holy shit, it's Faker again. Because I love when people play to a high level. But because I've seen so many games in these esports titles, I know that when someone's having an off split, or they're just not effective at the time, or it might be something like maybe in the personal life, they don't practice as much, or they're thinking about where they're at in their career. There's been those years. There was times last year. There was times a couple of years ago, 2022 in the spring. There's times when Caps wasn't always Claps, and he wasn't the guy who was like, mate, put him against Showmaker. Maybe he could beat him. Like, there was times when he just came down to like best LEC mid, but that wasn't the same as like could go against the Asian teams. Now it feels like he's in his ascendancy again. This is the prime Caps, right? There's almost no downside to this player, is there?
For sure. And I mean, basically, okay, I'm not going to say who, but somebody on my staff sent me a really interesting statistic the other day, which is that if you want to know how seriously G2 took Fnatic in this final, G2 are already on China sleep time. They're not even because we know from their solo queue accounts, we know that multiple people on G2 didn't even sleep before the Fnatic series. They're just already on MSI.
That's also pretty gangster too. That's pretty cool.
I don't know all five of them, but at least three. Okay, I like on like that's. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just goes to show the value of an LEC final that's in the studio now. we'll see. You know, like it's all very good to, you know, when you're like the big boy in town, you know, you post all your scrim results where you're stomping everybody. You like troll on stage. You don't need to sleep before an LEC final. You know, it's all very well to go and do this, but then okay, show that you deserve to do this on an international level, right? And yeah, we'll go and see. But yeah, but like Caps, like, man, if you've seen this guy for 6 or 7 years, you know that like they're not playing seriously. Like, and there's different levels of trolling, right? Like but for fans, I think it's very easy for fans to go and say, to go say, oh, it's just Caps and it's just Claps. But there's sometimes where Caps is like inting because he needs to int to come and make a play, you know, because the game's sit close, it's a really, really close series. And there's sometimes where it's just lack of focus. And like this, there was one death I remember, I can't remember which game it was, but he was on Azir, they were pushing bot lane turret, and Broken Blade was pushing tier 2 with TF on top lane.
Oh, yes.
Against Fnatic, yeah. It was game, I can't remember whether it was game 2 or something, but and they just die for no reason. Like, three people just die, because obviously Fnatic know that TF can't reach across the map, so like five people go on them, it's 5v3 bot, and like that kind of thing is never going to happen in the international competition, right? Like it's just like lack of focus. I just quickly,
it's game three, the
yeah. But yeah, they won that game like really, really hard. It was game three against Fnatic, and yeah, you know, like I yeah, I mean, I don't have more to say. Like, let's see how these teams do. I think Europe has looked a bit sloppy this season, but there are certain teams in Europe that are very, they have very strong fundamentals for how they want to play the game, right? They have very clearly checklist for how you want to do. And in spring split, in winter split, those teams all did super, super well, you know? But the teams that played in very like color by numbers style didn't do as well in spring split. And I think that is promising for EU's chances at MSI. And it's not like, I think in Razorc and in Caps, there's definitely people that G2 and Fnatic can play around to like do damage to these Asian teams. So looking forward to it.
Yes. Well, here's the tough question. I'm going to leave you with a hypothetical that I want an answer on. So we know already the four Asian teams that are going. We've got the mighty BLG, who dominated LCK. We've got the, well, still to be seen, but in theory have dominated the LPL, sorry. Then we've got Gen G, who dominated the LCK, even though the finals was close. And then we have Top Esports, who's obviously, I would say, got stronger and stronger throughout the split and then had an amazing playoff run. Jackie Love's back. And then you've got T1, you've got the mighty T1, the reigning world champions, right? So these four teams, which would you match up with G2 and say they have the best chance to beat?
It's either T1 or Top. I'm gonna say Top because I want to see that series. Because Cream, this is like his first international tournament. Yeah. He's been like the hype guy forever.
Yep.
And watching him against Caps is gonna be really, really hype. They're a team that can go really, really crazy. They have 369, so that they know how to play weak side properly. It will be, that series will be really, really fun. I think it will come down a lot to Mako versus Mickey because how they choose to set up their map. So I'm really looking forward to that series. If I'm honest, I think T1 have the potential. Do they have potential to lose a best of five? They have the potential to drop games to G2. Okay. I'll say that. But yeah, definitely for C9. For G2, it's Top. Actually, for a spicy one, who do I think that Fnatic have the highest chance to beat? Fnatic, I think, have the highest chance to beat BLG.
Holy fuck! Holy shit! Bro, they have like the most insane fucking jungle mid in the world!
They have the best jungle mid in the world, but... Hear me out. Okay, Oscar's biggest strength as a player is his laning phase, right? He's good 1v1, but he doesn't really know how to teamfight that well or how to play on the map that well, you know? So playing into Bin, he is, I think, the European player who is the best equipped to not get stomped into the floor.
Okay.
By him. And what I will say is, BLG don't get punished enough for some of the early game, like... They sometimes take risks in the early game, or they sometimes draft things that they shouldn't be allowed to do. And sure, their 2v2 is really, really insane. But if Razor can punish Jhin, it's possible. It's not likely.
No, it's a spicy take.
But of all the teams, I want to see BLG versus Fnatic, and I want to see, because BLG are a team that's always really, really well prepped. So I want to see what BLG do to shut down Razor. And you know, sometimes top Chinese teams underrate international competition. I'm really sorry if you're a Chinese fan, right? Sometimes they do. And if BLG underestimate Fnatic, they're going to get like a, you know, an uppercut to the jaw, and then we'll see how strong their jaw is. But yeah, that's the one I'm looking forward to, for sure.